Good morning, and welcome to Overeaters Anonymous, a Vision for You Big Book study. My name is Dawn B., and I'm a recovered compulsive overeater from Southern California. Today's Tuesday, February 6, 2024, and this is the 10 a.m. Eastern Time meeting. Today we're reading from the Big Book, and we're on page 1, the second paragraph. We landed in England through two paragraphs ending, "Whether he dieth by musket or by pot." Commenting on these two paragraphs today. Today's readers, 12 Steps, Lorraine N., 12 Traditions, Diana R. Readers of the text, Penny L. C., Dana P. will read page 164, and our backup reader is Shelley E. The reference number for Monday, February 5th, 10 a.m. Eastern Time meeting is 21,101. That's 21,101. And for this morning, Tuesday, February 6th, 7 a.m. Eastern Time meeting, the reference number is 21,103. That's 21,103. Our newcomer greeter this morning is Carla C., and Betsy H. will do the announcements. Thank you so much to everyone for your service. OA Preamble. Overeaters Anonymous is a fellowship of individuals who, through shared experience, strength, and hope, are recovering from compulsive overeating. We welcome everyone who wants to stop eating compulsively. There are no dues or fees for members. We are self-supporting through our own contributions, neither soliciting nor accepting outside donations. OA is not affiliated with any public or private organization, political movement, ideology, or religious doctrine. We take no position on outside issues. Our primary purpose is to abstain from compulsive eating and compulsive food behaviors and to carry the message of recovery through the 12 steps of OA to those who still suffer. Our sole purpose. OA's fifth tradition states, each group has but one primary purpose, to carry its message to the compulsive overeater who still suffers. At a Vision for You Big Book study, our message is that people who suffer from compulsive overeating can recover through abstinence and the practice of the 12 steps and 12 traditions of Overeaters Anonymous. Here are the steps we took, which are suggested as a program of recovery. I'll now ask Lorraine N. to read the 12 steps of OA.
Thank you, Dawn. Good morning, everyone. Lorraine N., recovered compulsive eater in Oregon. The 12 steps of Overeaters Anonymous. 1, we admitted we were powerless over food, that our lives had become unmanageable. 2, came to believe that a power greater than ourselves could restore us to sanity. 3, made a decision to turn our will and our lives over to the care of God as we understood him. 4, made a searching and fearless moral inventory of ourselves. 5, admitted to God, to ourselves, and to another human being the exact nature of our wrongs. 6, were entirely ready to have God remove all these defects of character. 7, humbly asked him to remove our shortcomings. 8, made a list of all persons we had harmed and became willing to make amends to them all. 9, made direct amends to such people wherever possible, except when to do so would injure them or others. 10, continued to take personal inventory, and when we were wrong, promptly admitted it. 11, sought through prayer and meditation to improve our conscious contact with God as we understood him, praying only for knowledge of his will for us and the power to carry that out. And 12, having had a spiritual awakening as the result of these steps, we tried to carry this message to compulsive overeaters and to practice these principles in all our affairs. Thanks for the opportunity to read the steps. I'll pass.
Thank you so much, Lorraine N. I'll now ask Diana R. to read the 12 traditions of Overeaters Anonymous.
Hi, this is Diana R. in Arizona, recovering food addict. The 12 traditions of Overeaters Anonymous. 1, our common welfare should come first. Personal progress depends upon our unit. OA unity. For a group purpose, there's but one ultimate authority, a loving God, as he may express himself in our group conscience. Our leaders are but trusted servants. They do not govern. 3, the only requirement for OA membership is the desire to stop eating compulsively. 4, each group should be autonomous, except in matters affecting other groups or OA as a whole. 5, each group has but one primary purpose, to carry its message to the compulsive overeater who still suffers. And 6, an OA group ought never endorse, finance, or lend the OA name to any related facility or outside enterprise, as problems of money, property, and prestige divert us from our purpose. 7, every OA group ought to be fully self-supporting, decoding outside contributions. Overeaters Anonymous should remain forever non-professional, but our service centers may employ special workers. 9, OA as such ought never be organized, but we may create service boards or committees directly responsible to those they serve. 10, Overeaters Anonymous has no opinion on outside issues. Hence, the OA name ought never be drawn into public controversy. 11, our public relations policy is based on attraction rather than promotion. We need always maintain personal anonymity at the level of press, radio, film, television, and other public media of communication. 12, anonymity is the spiritual foundation of all these traditions, ever reminding us to place principles above personalities. Thank you for letting me serve, and with that, I'll pass.
Thank you so much, Diana R. How our meeting works. Our meeting focuses on the directions for recovery described in the Big Book of Alcoholics Anonymous. We read a paragraph or two from the literature and then stop and share on what was read. Anyone can share, but we ask that you keep your sharing to the topic and literature we are discussing, and that you keep your share to approximately 3 minutes. Singleness of purpose reminds us to identify as compulsive overeaters only. Our abstinence requirement for moderators is 1 year, and for readers is 6 months. There is no abstinence requirement for sharing on topic. This meeting does request that your sharing be directly linked to what was read. We are sharing what the directions in the Big Book mean to us. To share, press *1 to unmute. Once you are done sharing, let us know by saying pass. Then press *1 to mute your phone. To have a quiet meeting, everyone's phone except the speaker's should be muted. Today, we resume our study of the Big Book, and we're on page 1, the second paragraph. We landed in England through two paragraphs ending, "Whether he dieth by musket or by pot," commenting on these two paragraphs today. I will now ask Penny L.C. to begin reading and then share with us.
Thank you, Don. Thank you for your service. Good morning to you and to everyone on the line. This is Penny L.C., a grateful recovered compulsive overeater from the state of Washington. We landed in England. I visited Winchester Cathedral. Much moved, I wandered outside. My attention was caught by a doggerel on an old tombstone. Quote, "Here lies a Hampshire grenadier who caught his death drinking cold small beer. A good soldier he ne'er forgot. Excuse me, a good soldier is ne'er forgot, whether he dieth by musket or by pot." So I'm trying to identify in with Bill in this story of his, and to see, you know, how I can relate to his situation. He's a young soldier, and he's out of his element. You know, he's uncomfortable with his surroundings. They're different. He feels uneasy about his tasks ahead of him. And he already has admitted to turning to alcohol. And yet now, here is this warning, this threat that comes from this tombstone, essentially, this headstone that says, you know, the gentleman that's been buried here was someone who, you know, was carried grenades in the war, but that's not what killed him, you know. Instead, he died because he overdid his alcohol consumption, and dies by pot. Pot is, I have understood, is a mug of beer. And so, you know, boy, can I understand that. When life was uncomfortable for me, when I was out of my element, when I was feeling uncertain and scared, food was my go-to. And if I had not found this recovery process and this program to help guide me and a higher power to direct my my everyness, you know, to help direct my thoughts, words, and actions, I would also have a tombstone that could read, "She dieth by excessive ingestion of food." So just being able to know that I am, you know, I am like Bill. And it's no different that that I have had warnings in my life about my health in general, with to do with exercise and nutrition, but specifically with my compulsive overeating addiction. You know, I had infertility issues for years, pointing to my eating choices. I had breast cancer with surgery and chemo, learning it was likely my eating choices were a factor. And years later than that, I had bone cancer metastasis with radiation, twice as much chemo, and an analogous stem cell transplant, and was stripped away of every extra pound. But that did not, I did not heed any of those warnings. I just continued down the path of my disease. And yet not long after, you know, being stripped of all my excess weight, I gained it all back with excess poundage. I continued to compulsively overeat, and my disease
Time.
Continued to progress and became out of control. It was this disease that finally got my attention to fully surrender. Thank you for letting me share with that, Alpia.
Thank you so much, Penny LC, for getting us started. And I'll now ask for the names of people who would like to share on these paragraphs. Although we value your experience, we ask that you limit your sharing to every third day in order that others might share their experiences too. So who would like to share with us?
Kara B. from Michigan.
Kara B.
Mm-hmm.
And who is the gentleman?
Tom L.
Tom L. Thank you. Okay, let's get started with Kara B, followed by Tom L, and then I'll take some more names. Go ahead, Kara.
Thanks so much. Can you hear me okay? I'm just making sure I'm unmuted.
Yep, can hear you just fine.
Thank you. Thanks. Hi, friends. I'm Kara B from Michigan, and I appreciate this reading today. The tragedy in this soldier's death was that he didn't die on the battlefield. He didn't die because he was in harm's way and due to circumstances beyond his control. Well, our eating is beyond our control as well, but his death was preventable. And that's the tragedy. And I so much relate to the earlier share of where I had the ominous warnings also that I failed to give heed to. And actually, that's not quite correct. I had ominous warnings from many doctors. I also had lots of health issues related to my overeating. And the doctors told me, you have to lose weight. You have to lose weight. And I had things like I had esophageal ulcers. I had hiatal hernia. I had diabetic issues, etc. And I remember sitting in a doctor's office and just being like, I want to. I'm just crying because I wanted to stop and I could not. And so I'm really grateful that my preventable death has been at a minimum postponed because I've been able to find the solution where I can turn my will and my life over to a power greater than myself to deliver me from the bondage of this insidious disease on a daily basis, as long as I suit up and show up and do the work and do those things that will connect me with my higher power, and I can access his power to do for me the things that I cannot do for myself, which is just to put down the food. I could not do that on my own, but my higher power could and would when I sought him. Thank you so much for letting me share. I'm going to pass.
Thank you so much, Kara B. Tom L., please share with us.
Hey, good morning, everyone. Hi, Dawn. And I find myself on a Overeaters Anonymous meeting, one of my favorites, Vision for You. There's a reason I'm here. It's been a hard road for me to get enthusiastic about recovery. It's because everything else didn't work. I grew up in the 80s, so I was terrified of military service. I remember having the selective service. You have to kind of send in a postcard at that time. Otherwise, I don't know, bad stuff would happen. It was it was legal. You had to do it. And there was one. I had an ace in the hole, though. I was at least 50, 60 pounds overweight in junior high school and 100 pounds overweight in high school. I was like, well, I don't think they're going to be picking me 4F. But I was scared. Now, Bill, I don't think he was a warlike guy, but his culture sure was back then. And, he was, I think, in a military school. And, you know, he's kind of funneled into that meat grinder, killed so many people. And so he was scared, as I was, much less reason to be scared me. But he went to church, and I don't think he was a very religious guy. And he was drinking a bit. His father was an alcoholic and had divorced his mom. His grandparents had let him know in detail what it was like to live with a drinker and what drinkers did. So he was probably of two minds about his drinking. I don't know if he was an alcoholic yet. If he could have, you know, had he known what the future was, you know, put it down and stayed away from it. But he was facing death, and God was in that church. He was much moved. He put so much into so few words, much moved. He was open to spirituality at that point. And he then God immediately took him out yard and pointed him at a tombstone which said, "Bill, you really shouldn't drink." And at that time, I think, you know, that is wisdom. I'm in contact with something. But like me, the pride of life got to him, and he didn't know about the allergy of the body then. And he didn't know about, like I didn't know. I had no idea that, I didn't understand why other people didn't eat like me. That's the truth. You know, how could these other kids who were not 100 pounds overweight in high school, I had very good reason to lose weight, but I just couldn't because food was too good. Not for them. I didn't know that. Anyway, this little paragraph becomes extremely important later on because it allowed him to point back to his earlier life that there was something trying to knock him on the shoulder saying, "Hey, listen to me." And I've had those experiences too when I was young, where it wasn't just selfishness. It was something otherworldly that can help us. So step one, he's going to die. Step two, there's this much moved thing that just happens to us. Anyway, thanks for letting me share.
Thank you so much, Tom L. from California. And although we value your experience, we ask that you limit your sharing to every third day in order that others might share their experiences too. We're talking today about page one, the second paragraph. We landed in England through two paragraphs ending, "Whether he dieth by musket or by pot." So if you would like to share, we would love to hear from you today. So go ahead, press star one and give me your name and initial, if you would.
Benita C.
Benita C.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Paula K.
Paula K. Who else would like to share? Press star one.
Kelly L. from Washington.
Kelly L. All right, let's go with those three names. I have Benita C., Paula K., and Kelly L. Benita C., please go ahead.
Good morning, everybody. This is Benita C. from Anchorage, Alaska.
And I was really moved by this. I have in my big book, I have written down that that passage was, the person's name was Thomas Fetcher, 1736 to 1764. So he wasn't even 30 years old when he died. And I was thinking about the ominous warning. You know, I've had so many warnings in my life about, you know, just stop eating. I mean, even to the emergency room, thinking I was having a heart attack and spending $8,000 for, you know, to find out I wasn't a heart attack. But if I kept up, you know, I was, you know, doomed. And yet I still was eating compulsively. I couldn't stop. And that's one of the things since I got in the program, and I've only been in the program a little over a year. And I'm doing pretty good, you know. I mean, I had to give up sugar and all that, but you know, I still find myself, that compulsion is still there. Once I start, I cannot stop. And you know, there's warning signs everywhere. I'm constantly watching other people, listening to other people, especially in this on visions. And you know, I pray for, you know, God guide my thinking, you know, and he does guide my thinking, and I don't listen to it, and I don't heed the warning. I think, well, you know, I'll do better when I, you know, if I get sick, or it, you know, that'll make me stop, you know, things like that. So the disease is still there. The fortunate thing for me is I can control it. If I come to these meetings and listen to you guys and just stick with the program, then, you know, and heed the warnings, you know, because they are out there. There's lots of, I have lots of books. I'm constantly reading books on eating better and, you know, having a food plan. You know, I read it, I'm gaining the knowledge. I'm just not totally acting on it as well as I want to. So anyway, thank you all for listening, and, you know, have a great day. This, I pass.
Thank you so much, Benita C. from Alaska. Paula K., please share with us, and followed by Kelly L., and then I'll take some more names. And Paula, please let us know where you're calling from.
Hi, this is Paula K. I'm in New Jersey. Can I be heard?
You sure can.
Okay, great. Thank you. I'm so glad that I called into this meeting. I've been in the program for about 28 years. I don't think I've ever called into a Vision for You meeting. The reading and the shares, you know, reminded me, which I'm so grateful to be reminded, how powerless, excuse me, how powerless I am over my disease. And just reminding me that, you know, like the big book says, you know, willpower alone is not something that, you know, is any defense against, you know, whatever addiction you have. And I'm just remembering how before I came here, I was so desperate. And I was just trying anything. I tried some of the most outlandish things and very desperate things. I even got to a point where I was fasting. I once had nothing but water for 9 days. And, of course, as soon as I started eating again, I was, you know, off to the races again. And I have absolutely no doubt in my mind, absolutely no doubt, that the only reason I'm abstinent today is because, excuse me, I'm just getting over COVID, is because God is doing for me what I can't do for myself. And it's just been, you know, the urge to compulsively overeat has just been taken away from me. I don't struggle. I follow my food plan. I weigh and measure my food. I'm so grateful to have a food plan, and I'm so grateful for the program. It's just unbelievable to me. I just feel like God is just carrying me in his hands. And I've heard people sometimes say that they're afraid they're going to lose their abstinence, and I just don't feel that way. I feel like, you know, if I do today what I do what I did yesterday, because there are some things I have control over. I can go to meetings. I can do the steps. I can make phone calls. I can use the tools. I can do all of that. I say my prayers. And if I do what's my part to do, you know, I just know that, you know, God's going to do for me what he's been doing for me for quite a while now. And just so grateful for the program and so grateful for the desperation that it took for me to come to these meetings and come to the program and to finally, after decades, to finally get it that I have no control over this. I have this disease. I'm powerless. But there is a solution, and I'm just grateful that I am in that solution for today. So with that, I pass.
Thank you so much, Paula Kay from New Jersey, for sharing today. Kelly L., please share with us.
Good morning, everybody. This is Kelly L. I'm a recovered compulsive overeater from Washington State. I just wanted to share just a little bit about these ominous, you know, warnings that myself included did not seem to be able to heed multiple times in life. And, you know, we have this joke in my family, that I'm smarter than the doctor, or I'm smarter than the coach, or I'm smarter than the ski instructor. And all started when I was probably 4 or 5 and I took ski lessons for the first time and decided to go my own way because I was a better skier than my ski instructor. And so it started this family joke, you know, Kelly, she's always smarter than the ski instructor. And even recently, you know, I went to a doctor and my mom, as soon as I got back from the doctor, my mom said, are you smarter than the doctor? And for the first time, I was able to honestly say no, and not because I ever was smarter than the doctor, but just that mindset of you don't know me, you don't know better than I do, I can figure this out. And so, you know, I chose to ignore all of the warnings because I, you know, would say that won't happen to me, that can't happen to me, you know, I'm smarter than that, et cetera. And so, you know, really, for me, it's not even that willpower didn't work. I mean, obviously it doesn't, but willpower was my problem. And thinking that I could do it on my own, I didn't need any help, just being fiercely independent and really having a lot of pride in that was really my detriment. And so I've, you know, 6+ months and entirely abstinent, recovered. And, you know, it's still a journey, that emotional sobriety piece of not wanting to take back over control and thinking I know better, you know, in certain situations. And, you know, I just, for me, when I set myself out of the way, that is only when my higher power can enter. And I'm just thankful every day for the desperation that got me to this program where I could finally fire myself and say, I am not smarter than anybody. I do not know better than the ski instructor or my sponsor. And then that's when God was able to enter. So thankful for that every day. And with that, I pass. Thank you.
Thank you so much, Kelly L. from Washington. We are talking about page 1, that second paragraph there. There it starts with, we landed in England, through 2 paragraphs ending, whether he dieth by musket or by pot. And we would love to hear from you today. So although we value your experience, we ask that you limit your sharing every third day in order that others might share their experiences too. So who would like to share with us?
Laura,
Adam.
Wow, I love that enthusiasm. Could we try it one more time? A little more.
Nancy. Laura W.
Nancy
J.
Adam R.
I heard Nancy, and I heard Adam.
Rohan.
Laura W. from New Jersey.
Laura W.
Vanessa G.
Vanessa G.
Rohan S.
Rohan S. Okay, I have
Evan
Nancy.
S.
I have Nancy, Adam, Laura, Vanessa, Rohan, and was there an Evan in there?
Kevin.
Okay, very good. All right. Let's go with that lineup. Did I miss anyone? I have Nancy, Adam, Laura, Vanessa, Rohan, and Kevin. Nancy, please go ahead. Give me your initial and where you're calling from, please.
Good morning, Nancy J. I'm in California, Pacific Standard Time. Great job, moderator, man. I tell you, getting the names, I stresses me out just thinking about trying to do it. So, job well done. So I've been a nurse for 38 years, and for 38 years, I've seen the warnings with my patients. I'm a surgical nurse, pre-op, post-op, and a little bit inside the room, inside the operating room. The high blood pressure, the diabetes, gastric bypass, gastric sleeve, removal of sleeve, removal of this, the suffering, people talking about the suffering, being in the operating room and seeing the belly incised and seeing the adipose tissue, otherwise known as that, you know. And I remember thinking back, I doubt that I look like that. I was in such denial. That's how I made it through. But really, before program, I made it through was I was always in the place of, well, tomorrow I'm going to do something about it. I know I'm eating this today, so tomorrow. So that would give me hope. I would have like pseudo hope. This is before program, right? So I would joyfully eat because I had hope to not eat. And then tomorrow would come, and of course, that wasn't going to happen. So that's how I lived my life. And then after program, after my pink cloud honeymoon phase, and I started slipping and sliding, my disease progressed after a few years of having a lovely abstinence and a, quote, moderate food plan. My hope was, well, tomorrow I'm going to start making my calls. I'm going to get on a meeting. I'm going to start doing the steps again. And guess what happened? Nothing. Until it did. And I'm so grateful that a year ago I got back in on these lines and the rooms, and God had given me the gift of desperation. God is my higher power, give me absolutely everything, because Nancy J can't do any of it. The only thing I can do is the work, the footwork. Everything else is God's gift. My abstinence this morning, my abstinence yesterday, my abstinence this last year, he removed 85 pounds, you know. My closet has shrunk from a billowing mess of every size to a reasonable this size, you know. It's such a miracle. And I saw something on Facebook. It said, the grass is always greener on the other side because I'm not over there effing it up. And that's been the story of my life. So I'm staying on this side. The grass is green here, and I'm super grateful. With that, I'll pass.
Thank you so much, Nancy J. from California. Adam R., please share with us, followed by Laura W.
Good morning. Can you guys hear me okay?
Yes.
Awesome. I'm Adam R. I'm from Southeastern Michigan. I'm coming to you by way of the Houston, Texas airport. And first time on this meeting, and gratefully recovering one day at a time. And, gosh, if I had the warning signs, thinking about the warning signs, the first thing that comes to me is the last time I returned from relapse. And I came in the program originally over 20 years ago, got clean, was absent for over 12 years, and then relapse happened insidiously, and I couldn't see it. I could not see it. And you know, it was interesting. I was taught early on that it's a service to share time in recovery, because it may give hope to someone who has less and keep it green for someone who has more. And the muscle memory of time and habit has been not only an incredible gift, because when I have struggled and I've realized what I needed to do, boom, I instantly just need to get clean.
Excuse me, Adam?
Yes.
Excuse me, Adam. It's a little bit difficult to hear you. Is there an adjustment you can make? It's a little bit difficult to hear, maybe.
Okay. Okay, hold on. Sorry, hold on.
Okay.
Okay, we'll do it this way.
Oh, much better. Perfect.
Yeah.
Thank you so much.
No problem. Yeah. Anyway, the bottom line is the addiction is so insidious that if I am choosing other things than the things that keep me clean, relapse is simply inevitable. And I know what keeps me clean. I go to, you know, 3-4 meetings a week. I talk to 2-3 other guys in the program every single day.
I journal my food. I do, you know, I have the things that I know darn well work. The challenge is it's what's easy to do is also easy not to do. And for me, things work so well that I quit doing them. And what I know today is that abstinence gives me the second thought. So I've never been the guy that gets the reprieve from the desire to medicate with food. I have the desire all the time, but now I get the second thought that says, play the movie through and look and see if you're going to like that outcome. And one day at a time, I make a different choice because I don't want the outcome. And, you know, we were in Houston today. My wife and I were in Houston because we were literally taking our oldest son, who was a 20-year-old college student at the University of Michigan, down to inpatient residential treatment for OCD. And I don't have to eat over that today. I don't have to eat over the joy of his younger brother getting accepted to the University of Michigan on a full-ride scholarship, right? I don't have to eat over that joy. I don't have to eat over marital challenges. I don't have to eat over work challenges. I don't have to eat over anything because there's not a single feeling that eating won't find a way to make worse. So anyway, with that, I'm going to pass it. I'm going to thank you all for being available to share and work the program with me. Thanks.
Thank you so much, Adam R. Laura W., please share.
Thanks. Good morning, everyone. This is Laura W. I'm recovered compulsive eater, anorexic, and exercise bulimic in South Jersey. Do I have a clear connection?
You do.
Okay, great. Thanks. Yeah, great shares, wonderful shares. Welcome to the newcomers. Welcome to the people who are just discovering this amazing meeting. You know, he says that ominous warning, which I failed to heed. So he failed to heed it, so he recognized it, but he ignored it. And how many times have I ignored, you know, those frothy emotional appeals by people that loved me? I came into Overeaters Anonymous in 1997. So 27 years ago, I walked into these rooms, February actually, 27 years ago this month, I walked into these rooms. But I've been abstinent and recovered for only 19 years. So that, you know, I'm not good at math, but I think it's like 8 years. What was I doing? I was failing to heed the ominous warnings. I was failing to say, I was failing to do what I knew in my heart was the right thing to do. But I figured that I was in program long enough. I got it. I had it made. I don't need to do all this crap, you know, and that was my attitude. I don't need to do all this work. I've got a life to live. I've got, you know, I had a baby at the time. You know, I don't have time to go to meetings. I don't have time to write. I mean, are you kidding me? And now, oh my goodness, if I go, the old saying, you go one day without writing my dear God letter, God knows. 2 days without writing that dear God letter, I know. 3 days without writing that letter, everybody knows, you know? So it's like, I need to work this program every single day as if my life depends on it, because it does. And I know that. I restricted and I ate like Bill drank. I acted like Bill acted with selfishness, self-centeredness to the core. And I thought like Bill thought, meaning like, at first, I was using my disease, the alcoholic foods, my anorexic foods, my anorexic behaviors. I was using it to celebrate, like he used alcohol. I was using it, you know, because in the beginning, I was getting great. You lost some weight. You look great. And then, you know, he thrived on attention. I used to thrive on attention. And then just a few paragraphs later, you know, he starts using alcohol to have a relationship with. I was using that. I was using all of my behaviors. You know, I had a relationship with that. I could control it. It was who I was. And that was the biggest struggle for me when I did go away to a residential treatment center. The struggle was, well, who am I going to be without this illness? Who am I going to be if I have to just, you know, gain some weight because I was severely anorexic? You know, I'm not going to be special. And you know what? God knows that I'm special. God knows that I am his precious child. And, you know, whether it's your higher power is the beautiful weather outside and the wind and nature or the ocean or God or Buddha or Allah or, you know, something greater than myself, get out of my selfish self and realize that I am not the end all be all. And that's what I had to find there. I need to heed these warnings that on my own, I'm dead, you know, and I'm so grateful for this book. I'm so grateful for Bill and what he had to go through in order to get us here. Thanks for letting me share. I pass. Tell me, don't hear you.
I'm sorry. I thought I was muted there. Vanessa G., please go ahead. Thank you, Laura W. Vanessa, go ahead, followed by Rohan.
Hi, everybody. My name is Vanessa G., recovered compulsive overeater in New Mexico. Couple of things. One is I noticed that I listened to the earlier meeting, too, this morning. And, you know, most of the shares, which have been really wonderful, by the way, focused on ominous warnings, which we didn't even read, which is interesting. Obviously, we needed to listen to those shares. But I wanted to talk about the first two or three sentences about Bill visiting Winchester Cathedral and being much moved. And later in his story, he talks about how the real significance of that moment comes to him while he's rediscovering a new concept of God, or not rediscovering, but discovering a new concept of his higher power. And how many spiritual experiences did I have prior to being able to recover from compulsive overeating? Many. I was much moved many, many times. I even went through the steps in another recovery program and found a higher power that worked for that particular program. But nothing touched my eating disorder until I actually took the instructions in this book and found a higher power that worked for that particular addiction. And that higher power includes all of you. It includes fellows who know and the torture of this disease and also know the solution to this disease. I am so grateful to be here. I'm so grateful to have found all of you and to have been able to stay here. It's not just being a moment of being moved spiritually. It's a lifetime, and I appreciate that. Thank you so much.
And thank you, Vanessa G. Rohan, please share with us, followed by Kevin, and let us know where you're calling from, if you would.
Hey, this is Rohan S. From New Jersey. I'm a recovered compulsive overeater and very grateful to be on this Vision for You meeting this morning. And, you know, for me, I am thankful that we're talking about this because I've never looked at my own life and examine the ominous warnings, you know, because when I look back at it, you know, they never seemed to be warnings. They were just deep resentments. For example, I remember when I was, you know, like 10 years old, me, my cousins and aunt, you know, went to eat subs at Subway Sandwich. And we ordered like a bunch of different flavors and styles and 6-inch subs. And I remember after having one, my aunt said to me, she pulled me aside and said, Rohan, you can't eat anymore. I'm like, yeah, but you're letting, you know, cousin A and cousin B eat more sandwiches. Why not me? And she's like, because you're different, you know? And she was alluding to the fact that I was overweight. And she was alluding to the fact that I have no portion control. And I had a deep resentment against her. And I hated her for that, mostly because, well, I wanted to eat another sandwich so badly, you know? And I thought, hey, I'm hungry. Why are you depriving me? And now I look at it, and it's amazing because I would assume that she didn't even know about the disease at that point, but she could see it in me. She knew the way I ate, and she could already see that, and she was warning me. She was almost trying to save me. And with the food, I could probably sit here and journal hundreds of stories like that throughout my life of people warning me and, you know, trying to tell me that you might be a little different, dude. And, you know, I love Bill's story, and this is just the beginning of it, but, like, you know, I'm compassionate for that Rohan who was 10 years old because he didn't have a God back then, you know, and there's no way he was going to have a God because he never got to a point of desperation, you know. And if you're sitting on this call and you're a newcomer and you're wondering, am I desperate enough? Well, you're on this call. you're seeking help. I never genuinely was seeking help all those years, you know? Like, I knew I had an overweight problem, but I didn't associate it with the fact that I was eating too much. I thought they were separate issues. Every time I tried to think they might be connected, my disease would convince me they're not, you know? And I had to go through a lot of pain to figure out, oh, it probably has something to do with the food that I keep on putting in my mouth and won't stop no matter what.
Time.
So thank you for letting me share.
Thank you, Rohan S. from New Jersey. Kevin, please share with us and let us know where you're calling from.
Hi there. This is Kevin N. from Washington, way out here on the West Coast. Glad to be here in the meeting this morning. Thanks to everyone for their service. As we were reading through this paragraph, it struck me in a way that it hasn't before. It says that he caught his death drinking cold small beer, which means that he didn't die because of the beer. He died because of exposure. He died because he couldn't bring himself back indoors and probably burned through every relationship that he had. And small beer is not alcohol. Barely, I mean, it's not liquor. It's barely even beer. It's like 2% stuff, the sort of thing that you give the kids or you would drink to hydrate if you didn't have access to clean water. Like, that's how desperate he was in that last moment of his life, just drinking the most bare thing he could to get just a little bit of that drug. And, you know, makes me think of my own eating habits. That it won't be the food that kills me. It'll be something else. It'll be a heart attack. It'll be some sort of, you know, health issue. And, you know, I'm sharing this morning because 2 weeks ago I had a kind of a health scare. I've been in the program now for 9 months, and I'm dropping weight, which is good. But that, you know, that doesn't mean that you know, I'm somehow in the clear, or that decades of abuse has somehow been erased. And 2 weeks ago, I ended up in the hospital with what felt like symptoms of a heart attack. And thankfully, after all, you know, a whole battery of tests, they said, no, you're not having any kind of cardiac episode at all. You're more likely having a panic attack. So there was some relief in that. But there was also, you know, it says ominous warning. Here's one right here. I now know what it's like to have a stranger put EKG monitors on me to see whether or not I'm in the middle of what could be the last moment of my life. And so as I think of small beer, I'm thinking small bites. I'm thinking, what's that little thing that I don't think matters that is going to get me if I don't take this seriously, if I don't heed that ominous warning? So I'm really great to be here. Glad to claim my seat on the call. Thanks to everyone again. With that, I pass.
Thank you so much, Kevin N. from Washington. And we're now going to close with a reading from the Big Book on page 164, followed by the Serenity Prayer. Will Dana P. please read a vision for you? Our book is meant to be suggestive only. Thank you to everyone who shared.
Thank you, Dawn. Dana P. here in California. Our book is meant to be suggestive only. We realize we know only a little. God will constantly disclose more to you and to us. Ask him in your morning meditation what you can do each day for the man who is still sick. The answers will come if your own house is in order. But obviously, you cannot transmit something you haven't got. See to it that your relationship with him is right, and great events will come to pass for you and countless others. This is the great fact for us. Abandon yourself to God as you understand God. Admit your faults to him and to your fellows. Clear away the wreckage of your past. Give freely of what you find and join us. We shall be with you in the fellowship of the Spirit, and you will surely meet some of us as you trudge the road of happy destiny. May God bless you and keep you until then.